Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Are you 0G, G1, or G2? The Black Institute is launching what it calls the G Project with a town hall forum in Brooklyn tomorrow night to focus on the immigration stories of Black Americans. G as in generation. And is it you, your parents, or grandparents who immigrated from Africa or the Caribbean in the case of Black Americans? First Lady Shirlane McRae will kick things off at this event with her own story, and it's getting some press because it's really her first public event since her husband, Bill de Blasio, was elected mayor. Bertha Lewis, president of the Black Institute, joins me now to talk about the project, and she has long known the McRae de Blasio family as well. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, I am so glad to be back and to be here with you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
So are you 0G, G1, or G2?
I'm none of the above, actually. But every Black American, no matter where they come from, all started out in Mother Africa because, as we know, during the slave trade, Africans were dropped off all through the Caribbean, South America. So in some way, if we're G10s, we all come from the same stock. But I think in modern times, immigrants from Africa, South America, and the Caribbean, we really don't look upon them as the face of immigration. And having Black Americans not just defined as African-Americans coming up from the South. There was a fourth migration from overseas. And Black Americans, especially African-Americans, are far more diverse than people think.
How about Shirlane McRae?
She's a second generation, G for generation, and her family comes from Barbados.
Generation
as well as Dante and
yes.
Kiara. Shirlane's a G2, and Dante and Kiara are G3s, and they've done a video about that, which will premiere tomorrow night at the forum.
And this, of course, is classic terminology when you talk about immigrants. The first generation people are the people who came themselves, and their children are second generation. That's usually the way
it's
referred
to. That's usually the way it is, but, you know, to kind of take off on a hip-hop theme, you know, we call someone born outside the U.S. in this project an OG, an original G.
I see.
And then,
oh, so it's not 0G. It's
right.
OG. It's the letter O.
OG. Yeah. Get hip, Brian.
And so did you know that a majority of New York City at this point is what I guess you call OG plus G1, that is immigrants and their children make up over 50%. I think it's 50% of residents of New York City today.
Absolutely. And, the you know, people want to talk about the changing demographics of the country. At one point, immigration really only affected a few states. Now it affects every state in the union, which is why comprehensive immigration reform has to be a priority. The system that we have now is broken, and I think part of the discussion is skewed because thank God for our Latino brothers and sisters that have made this issue major and have been so active. However, you know, if folks think they have to just woo Latino voters, they better think again, because Black voters, for the first time in 2012, voted in more numbers and outvoted white voters. So the question is, who are these Black voters? And we wanted to explore that. And so rather than just saying supporting immigration reform is a civil rights issue, why don't we highlight, make visible, and educate folks about Black Americans that sometimes you wouldn't even suspect. I mean, Colin Powell is
Jamaican.
A G. Yes.
Yeah.
And many, many people have that in their background. As I say, I found out through a DNA test that I'm 81% Kenyan. So I share that with the President Barack Obama.
Thanks to Skip Gates, Henry Louis Gates, right. and his series on PBS and his books about that, right? Everybody
That's
knows
right.
now exactly what percentage of everything we are and that nobody's pure anything.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
But why emphasize blacks who are African American, meaning descendants of slaves, versus blacks who are from more recent immigrant families, immigration by choice? Does it, if your goal is to empower black voters and make sure the black vote, you know, is taken seriously by politicians, does this risk dividing more than uniting? Why not just lump everybody together in that sense? Christina Greer, the Fordham University political science professor, writes about this in her recent book, Black Ethnics, that there certainly are different life experiences that she discovered at college, you know, coming from African Americans rather than from blacks of recent immigrant heritage. So there's certainly a conversation within the community. But in terms of maximizing overall black electoral power, why emphasize the difference?
Well, actually, that's not what we're doing. What we're saying is the diversity goes deep. You got baby mama G's or baby daddy G's. You have African Americans that, you know, have married or have Caribbeans in their family. And so African Americans are far more together with black immigrants than is popularly known. They're, I believe, the society at large tends to set up this division between traditional African Americans and recent immigrants. And it's just false. We interact together. We marry. We intermarry. You know, our families are mingled. I remember growing up as a little girl, everyone knew or had someone in their family that was a at that time, we said a West Indian. So we have been united and together. It is sometimes the powers that be who really take advantage of trying to divide and separate, just as folks tried to divide blacks from Latinos by saying to African Americans and to blacks here, oh, that's not your issue. It is our issue because it is our heritage.
Bertha Lewis, president of the Black Institute, our guest on WNYC, previously head of ACORN yep. in New York, previously co-chair of the Working Families Party.
That's right.
And if you want to talk to Bertha Lewis, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. And I see that you refer to the Black Institute as an action tank
right.
as opposed to a think tank.
Well, we are a think tank that takes action. And of course, Brian, you know my background. I'm
an
organizer. I'm
yeah.
an organizer. And so when I put together the Black Institute, I knew there were three things and three strategies. You need data, research, polling. You need the think tank aspect because there's so much information for and about people of color. And if, in fact, in this country, we are changing demographics, then I do think in this non-post-racial period, we need to look at things through an of-color lens. And from that information, we need to bring it down and develop public policy, develop legislation. But finally, none of that means anything if you don't take action and connect it to community and move it on the ground. So there, ergo, action tank, a think tank that takes action.
Now, before we take some phone calls for you, talk to me more about Shirlane McRae. Why is this her first public event?
Well, I am thrilled that it turned out that way. This forum is being held at the Christian Cultural Center in Brooklyn, which is, you know, a huge mega church pastored by Pastor A.R. Bernard, who himself is a G. And it's something because Pastor Bernard is black, but also is an Afro-Latino because he's from Panama and he's an OG and his children are G1s. So when he and I first talked about this, he understood immediately about making visible the black face of immigration. And I discovered this past year that Shirlane, in fact, was a G herself, which thrilled me. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. People don't know. And so it just turned out I asked her to be a part of it. And as it turned out, this is her first solo public appearance. I am thrilled. She's the first lady in her first appearance, and it's with me.
Yay for you. And she's also in the news for hiring Al Sharpton's communications director as her chief of staff, Rachel Nordlinger. And we now know she'll have an office in City Hall and a policy portfolio. Do you think her participation tonight, or maybe you even know that her participation tonight in your event is a signal that immigration will be one of the areas that she focuses on?
Well, it wasn't – I don't know if it was some planned intent. It was something that Pastor Bernard and I talked about, and I said, oh, wouldn't it be great to have the First Lady? And it was never connected. However, having a forum like this, I believe, helps in highlighting and putting some focus on the mayor's immigration policy stance. He's been very clear about the types of things he wants to do that the city can do around immigration because, as you said at the top of the show here, the majority of folks in this city are not only people of color, but they are also OGs, G1s, G2s, G3s.
Immigrants, children of immigrants, grandchildren
right.
of immigrants. What other areas do you expect Shirlane McCrae to work on?
I have no idea. I don't have those kind of discussions with her. I am just happy that this is her first thing and that this signals that she is a thinker and that she thinks about bigger issues. I mean, doing this forum and highlighting her G status and her family's G status, but stepping out on her own to do something that has nothing to do with legislation, but has everything to do with a larger public policy issue, I think is great. And I'm happy that she's doing this. I have no discussions at all about what her plans are, but I'm sure whatever she does, it is going to benefit the city as in its entirety.
Janet in Harlem. You're on WNYC with Bertha Lewis. Hello, Janet.
Hello, Brian. I have to say, I listen to your show all the time, and I say what everybody says, I love your show.
Aww.
You are terrific. You bring up so many interesting topics.
You're too
but
nice.
This topic is clearly and dearly important to me. I am a G2.
Yay!
I never heard that term before. And there is a picture of my grandmother in Ellis Island. When people think about the immigrant experience, they don't take into account the West Indian experience. And I'm proud to say there's a picture of my grandmother. Her last name is Tediani, which is actually a French name. They're from Trinidad. Her brother, Charles Tediani, was a doctor who became very important in Harlem and was actually the personal physician to Marcus Garvey. When you think about the Caribbean experience, you think about G2s and G1s who became very successful. One of the first black borough presidents was a man named Hewlin Jack, who was from St. Lucia. And I take a lot of pride in my background and also, as the speaker says, my connection to Africa, because I can also trace through my Caribbean connection my descendancy from Benin. But the story has got to be told, and I'm so glad that the show and what's going on in Brooklyn tomorrow is going to highlight that.
And you just told a nice part of it yourself. Janet, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Oh, that is wonderful. This is exactly what I'm talking about, that, you know, you pass people on the street, and here in America, we go, oh, that's just African-American. And again, you put everything in one big box. But you've got to look at the diversity within black Americans. And also you have black immigrants. They came in from Canada. You know, they came in from Great Britain. And if we truly are going to talk about race, which makes people uncomfortable, and you talk about race and ethnicity, you have to look at it in the bigger context, but also kind of get your hands dirty by digging down deep into some of the things that divide us.
Drew in Syosset, you're on WNYC. Hello, Drew.
Hey, I'm a little bit curious, specifically since such a small percentage of the people across the Middle Passage ended up in the Americas, is there a way to make a guess of what percentage of people who classify themselves as African-Americans in the United States are descendants of slaves as opposed to descendants of other peoples who decided to move to the United States? And what does this do to the whole idea of reparations?
Well,
that's a big question.
Well, again, I think you have to have the real conversation and have the real data and the research and not shy away from looking at this. I mean, at this point, you've got Oscar-nominated picture, 12 Years a Slave, you know, screenplay by a black man. And so it's on people's minds at this point. I don't know the percentage, but I can tell you this. There are 60 million folks in the U.S. who are first, second, third generation.
Immigrants from anywhere, and, not
right,
necessarily
from all
just
over.
Black immigrants. Right?
But when you get to black immigrants by generation, they're first generation is there's over 3 million. You've got first and second generation combined, you've got 3.8 million. And third generation and higher, that would include, you know, going back to G5s, 23 million.
So what percentage, to his question, what percentage of all black Americans would that be at this point? Do you know?
I don't want to give out a false figure. I'll look it up and I'll get it to you, Brian, so you could tell him later on today. But 23 million black people in this country are third generation and lower. That's a significant number of people.
One more call, and I'm going to let Judd in Brooklyn bring up something that you used to work on when you were at Acorn in Brooklyn. Hey, Judd.
Hi, how are you? How are you doing?
Good.
Brian and Brooke. I was just calling because I see, you know, I live in Brooklyn, Atlantic, and I live in a West Indian neighborhood, and actually my girlfriend's West Indian. I'm white. And I live here just down the road from Barclays, and I love that it's there now. At first, I was really upset about it because I was a Freddie's Backroom guy. But anyway, I was calling because of the affordable housing issue, I guess. People mm-hmm. don't really seem to be talking about it so much anymore, and I know that when that was built, it was supposed to be, mm-hmm. you know, accompanied with quite a bit of affordable mm-hmm. housing.
And that's why you supported it,
absolutely.
Right?
And
yeah.
So let me just say, the first
tower. So the
tower,
question is what happened, right?
That's right.
Yes, that's all.
And I'm glad he asked, because the first tower right now as we speak is going up. I'm very happy to engage the new de Blasio administration because we have 13 more to go up.
De Blasio supported it too, by the way.
And because of the affordable housing component. And it's just my opinion, but I think the de Blasio administration is even more committed to making sure that the affordable units are there. But the first tower is going up. This time next year, people will be moving in, and construction will have started on tower 3, 4, 5. And as we go on, I am thrilled that we're finally out of this deadlock and we're moving forward with the housing.
Is there anything that Mayor de Blasio, as someone with an obvious commitment to seeing the affordable housing actually built, can do? Is there a lever of power that he can operate from City Hall now that Mayor Bloomberg maybe wouldn't have been inclined to push as hard on? You know, I don't know if the pressure point is there or if it's outside the city's enforcement at this point to make sure that housing is built.
That pressure point is there. I mean, the HPD the housing agency plays a huge role in this, and making sure that we get the affordable housing. The Mayor de Blasio has said he intends, which I don't think is enough, to do over 200,000 units. And so since we're already on this path, let's start here. Let's make sure that other mega developers do more than 20% in any housing project. Instead of 80-20, which is 80% market, 20% affordable, I'd flip it. Let's do 20-80, 20% market, 80% affordable. Let's change the way we dish out subsidies to reward people for doing truly affordable housing.
Of course, you may never get 20-80 because then the incentives wouldn't be there for the developers to actually build. They wouldn't think they could make enough money, or don't you agree with that?
I do not agree with that. And in fact, you know, we've been in housing development. We don't want this to be philanthropy. You can make money. You can make a profit building affordable. And also, how you use tax breaks and subsidies is can be an incentive.
All right. So your answer to the caller, the affordable housing units are going up
yes.
at Atlantic Yards. And the Nets are 8-1 this month. So we will have to leave it there with Bertha Lewis, president of the Black Institute. They are launching the G Project with a town hall forum tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night we have T.J. Holmes from CNN is our moderator. We have Joy Ann Reed from MSNBC. We have Praz from the Fugees. You know, we have Antonio Vargas,
Praz been on who, the show.
Who is Pulitzer Prize winning immigrant. And it is going to be super. And, of course, the First Lady, Shirlane McRae.
6 p.m. at the Christian Cultural Center on Flatlands Avenue in Brooklyn. And there's more information on our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. If you want to know more, Bertha Lewis, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Still to come, why New York emergency rooms got a C and New Jersey's ERs a D+. In a new report card from emergency room physicians. And then Thomas Moore on his book, A Religion of One's Own. He will help you if you're religiously unaffiliated to forge your own original spiritual path. Stay with us.